from stpetecatalyst.com.
Joining me today is a partner at Johnson Pope and, pertinent to our subject matter today, the Florida, the board chair of the Florida Holocaust Museum, Michael Eagle. Welcome.
Thanks for having me. Nice to be here.
So we are in a bit of in challenging times to some extent when it comes to a lot of the subject matter that the Holocaust Museum deals with. Anti-Semitism and those sorts of hate crimes are up quite a bit in Florida over the last year. You've spoken out against it in general and specifically with some incidents in Tampa. You know, what do you attribute to the factors that are driving this rise in this hate speech?
Sure. And it's statistic based in terms of the facts are there. You know, the recent studies are, you know, that anti-Semitism is up over 30% year over year. Jews constitute just about 2% of the population, but over half of the hate crimes in America. I mean, the statistics will really blow your mind. And then it's anecdotal too. You know, it feels worse. it feels more frightening. It feels like there's unfortunately more opportunity to have to respond. It feels more isolating. So you really have that combination of the numbers, but then it really feels that way too. One of the reasons I think is why we're here at the Florida Holocaust Museum is, you know, education is so important. I always say education. It's three things. And, you know, one of our goals is to make sure that Holocaust education, first of all, is in every school in Florida. We work intensely to do that. We work very closely with the Department of Education to see that happen. And our goal also is to make it so this isn't just a paragraph in a textbook, in the history section of a textbook. These are real. My grandparents were Holocaust survivors. My story is a compelling example. And I'm just one of, you know, of why this education is important. It creates empathy. These are, again, not only is it backed by statistics, I'm walking proof of it. I mean, it really does create empathy in people young and old. It also empowers people to want to do something to change things, to make them better. And God, I mean, do we not need more of that in society right now? You know, we need the brightness and the positivity to outshine and be louder than the negativity. We arguably never needed that more.
Yeah. And when you look at that education, obviously it's you know, important to never forget what happened and to really understand it. But in addition to that, that's so history doesn't repeat itself. Is that fair to say? That's a big part of the mission of the education.
Oh, there's no question. And it's through the education that we minimize the risk that anything like this ever happens again. You know, to me, that's almost. That's my marching order, you know, from my grandparents. That's the lesson. There are many ways on how to do that. But I think there's no question that the never again, you know, to remember is so important, but it's not enough. Remembering isn't enough by itself. We must do. And that's where the education comes in. It's building the better tomorrow through people.
And if we look at the rise of Nazism in Germany at the time, it was a movement that grew into, you know, something huge and nefarious. You know, when people ask you, how did that happen? How did it go from an idea and a few people to a whole country with devastating consequences? You know, what are those warning signs? What are the seeds that those things emerge from?
How much time do we have? No, it's you ask a great question and a very complicated one. I think you have to, like a lot of problems, you have to have the right ingredients in the soup for the soup to be made. And I think there are some things that unfortunately are constants. Anti-Semitism, you know, Jew hatred has been around for thousands of years. We've been, accused of killing Jesus, drinking baby's blood, slavery, we're responsible for slavery. So, I mean, it's always been in the ether. And so I think you have to have that ingredient. You have, historically we look and, you know, Germany, Europe is just really was not concentrated in Germany. Poland, where my family's from, was really numerically the centerpiece of it. But Europe was coming out of World War I. It had gone into a depression. People were hungry. People had no jobs. They were looking for somebody to blame it on. Here comes somebody to power who blames it on them. I'm, of course, grossly oversimplifying all the things that happened, but somebody comes to power and blames all of these ills. I can fix your ills, and here's who's responsible for them. And then you combine that with thousands of years of already this sort of built-in hate that's kind of hanging out underneath a rug, and masterful propaganda, and that it's those types of ingredients that lead to these things, you know.
And so some of the elements that you talk about there are present in different ways in today's world. You have, people struggling that are disgruntled, they're looking for someone to blame. And, we really do have propaganda machines out there that are pretty powerful. So how are you, that the Jewish people have been through this to such an incredible degree, how much do you feel like you have to be the watchdog, so to speak, that, these things, that history doesn't repeat itself and push into that arena?
It's a great question. I think there's, for lack of a better term, there's an empathy that comes with being that underdog or that oppressed, constantly oppressed group that makes you want to make sure there's a compulsion on us to be part of the solution, to not let what happened to us happen to other people. And I think it's connecting a person to a person. It's no matter who it is, it comes from ignorance. And so it's saying, that's not a blank, that's a person, okay? And the most people are good people. And so when they learn that and they get themselves educated, there's a humanity that comes out of them. So I don't want to be like that. I don't want to be a bad person. And it's that light bulb that kind of goes off in them that once they're educated in a way like by the museum, and they hear these stories and they hear what people did that was terrible, and hear what people did that was wonderful, they know which team they want to be on. And I've seen it. It's really 100% of the time. There are many people who come into the museum who have have access to our resources, but never heard of Adolf Hitler, have never heard of the Holocaust, don't know what a concentration camp is, and they are enlightened when they walk out. We're a place of hope, and so we do put it on our shoulders to not only protect the Jewish people. We're not a Jewish organization in that sense. We're here to use the lens of the Holocaust to press back against these types of issues, particularly anti-Semitism and genocide. But the ingredients that are part of that have just incredibly wide-ranging impact, and we're cognizant of that.
So can you talk a little bit about how the museum is specifically expressing this educational push and other communications pushes to get the info and then the enlightenment out into the world?
Sure. It's one of my favorite things to talk about, actually. So, first, in no particular order, although, I think the most material thing is we have over 20,000 artifacts, which is something that everybody in the Tampa area and in St. Pete should be extremely proud of, because it dwarfs the size of collections of other museums in decidedly larger markets. And that's something we have here. And we use those artifacts to tell the stories that the artifacts tell. They're associated with a person. They're associated with a mother, a father, a brother, sister. And we tie those together. And I'll get into that, in just a second. We also use cutting edge technology. I mentioned our focus in many respects. When I say education, it means lots of different things, but one of the core things for the museum is the relationship with the Department of Education and the work we do in schools in Florida. For parents to know that their children are learning what can happen if you don't do the right thing, but the wonderful things that can happen if you do, that's what they're learning when they're learning about the Holocaust. And I've taken parents on countless tours of the museum, and they say various versions of, it's so important my child learns math and learns science, but this is what I want my child to know too. And so important that they be, a positively contributing citizen. That's what this does. But we also use cutting edge technology. We are one of a small handful of organizations and institutions in the world that has what's called Dimensions in Testimony, which is a partnership we have with the USC Shoah Foundation, which is Steven Spielberg's foundation that works towards Holocaust and genocide education. And through artificial intelligence, you can actually interact with pre-recorded interview of a Holocaust survivor. And it's absolutely fascinating. Somebody who's grown up around all of this, I'm still in total awe that I can go into the museum. And it's a week of interviews for these survivors. And you're talking about people who are in their 90s, and they have to go back through all the hell that they went through. But you can even ask, what's your favorite song? What do you like to eat for lunch? Because part of that is reminding, these are people. And, you know, one of the existential questions has always been, well, what are we going to do when survivors are no longer here? And, you know, it's on people like me, who are descendants of survivors, but it's on everybody to carry on these legacies and these stories. But one of those keys to that lock is dimensions in testimony, the idea that forever these recordings will be there and people can talk to the survivor. So those are just two of the examples. We are in the process of working on some major changes to the building. They will include a theater for dimensions and testimony, a first of its kind children's center, because we have lots of students, tons of students that come through on an annual basis. But we are also going to be working in this children's center on even younger children in a safe, age-appropriate way to also arm their parents, because so many parents say, I want to talk about these issues. I have no idea how to do it. And so we want to help that interaction as well. So that's just some of the examples. We have nationally recognized Holocaust education curriculum. We are contacted often by school districts and other states for help. We also have what we call our teaching trunks, which is one of our hallmarks. It is a age-appropriate, you know, it's broken up into grade level, middle school, high school as well. And it's literally a large trunk that is sent to any school in the country free of charge that is, in many respects, a one-stop shop for the teacher to be able to engage in Holocaust education with his or her students. We conduct teacher trainings throughout the year. I mean, we're getting it done.
There's a lot.
Absolutely. And one more item I should add, too. Sure. I mentioned the artifacts, but also the stories associated with them. So we've always spoken through our survivors, and we have a speakers bureau that consists of survivors, what we call 2G, meaning second generation, the children of survivors, 3G, like me, third generation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just to give you a snippet of my story, for example, my grandparents were Polish farmers. They were married about a day and a half after Hitler invaded Poland. My grandfather went off to war that day, came back just a few days later when, you know, Hitler had stomped through Poland. They were placed in a ghetto. They had an infant child, my aunt. They gave her away to strangers. They ended up hiding in the forest. They were hidden by good people, non-Jews, who ultimately were executed for hiding them. They were tortured for 6 weeks. They did not give up the whereabouts of my grandparents, and they were executed for it. And when you learn, and I learned through the stories of my grandparents, but some of the detail has come out through the research department at the museum, which is another one of the unbelievable treasures we have, is helping people learn about their family members. When you grow up as a descendant of survivors of genocide, you don't have lots of pictures from the old country and the family, because your family was lucky to survive. Mm-hmm. My father didn't ever know his grandparents. And so the museum's research department actually goes and they find the names of the rest of people like me they find family member names. So I'm able to read those names out every year on Holocaust Remembrance Day so I can honor my family. And I honor the people who were executed for saving my grandparents. I wouldn't be here without them. That's why I wake up every day and say, what are you going to do today that makes you worthy? You're not supposed to be here. Those are these types of lessons, and that's what we impart on people. And we see the results. People want to make a difference when they know there are other people in the world like this.
So the year ahead, you know, you have some plans. You'll be bringing on a new executive director sometime in the near future. Some other things in the works. Can you talk a little bit more about how the Holocaust Museum, Florida Holocaust Museum, will be growing?
Absolutely. So in addition to several changes to the physical space, and continued movement towards technological advancements, we think big. That's our thing. And so I certainly won't rest until our educational materials are in every single school in Florida. We have some things coming up that I can't share because it's in the surprise, that the value's in the surprise. So, but I can promise everyone that you will know when they happen. It is a statewide endeavor that we're extremely excited about, where, you know, it's one of those things where when business is good for us, it's actually kind of frustrating. So we're disappointed with the need for it, but very excited about what we're doing. And those are some of the main areas, I think. You know, there's a lot of growth in the building itself, significant growth from a statewide perspective in our reach, period. And then some endeavors that are really going to make you think, well, that's interesting. One example would be, for example, we'll be announcing soon, I can talk about it just a bit here, a look at the use of comedy to combat anti-Semitism in particular, but really hatred in general, and how Mel Brooks, you know, famously said, comedy is going to bring down Hitler or any other despot much faster than any gun or cannon. And the idea of laughing, and how, I mean, you know, there was vaudeville in the concentration camps in Auschwitz, for example. And so this a really educational look at the use of comedy to combat hate. We are, as many people know, we did the Bill Graham exhibition a few years ago. We were all about rock and roll, which was kind of my baby. In fact, you can see a Bill Graham doll back here. And we've got some things coming out, sports related, that are going to be exciting. We are constantly working to make sure that we are appealing to everybody. I know that if you got to, you can get to me through sports, you've always been able to get to me through sports. So we're continuing to find new ways also to communicate the message. So people are being taught, but it doesn't feel like you're being taught. That's our goal.
That's fantastic. Well, I've enjoyed the conversation. You know, we've covered a lot of ground and a lot of different emotional mini journeys. You know, as a sort of a final thought, just coming through, you know, your family history to where you sit today in St. Petersburg, Florida. You know, what's a mindset, you know, or maybe a thinking point that we can maybe examine a little bit after this conversation is finished that you could leave us with?
Yeah, you know, that's another great question. I think that, you know, this is, first of all, you know, anti-Semitism is not just, as I mentioned before, not just a Jewish problem. This is an issue for a community at large, for society at large. And the only way we're going to combat it is by coming together. And I'm not saying that with words, with action. Care about this stuff. You know, we have to care about each other. And I always say that I'm walking proof of it, but that's not an empty phrase. I literally wouldn't exist if people hadn't stood up against the most inhumane circumstance in modern history and done the right thing. So know that there are people out there who do the right thing when it's almost impossible to do it, and just have at least a little bit of that in you. And find a way, come to the museum or access our materials online. Most of our artifacts are online in 3D. You can take a tour of the museum. I promise it will change you for the better. And we just need more of that. We're better than this. I'm just one example of that. That's why I'm compelled every day to do what I do. I'm going to go back and draft some contracts now, and you can imagine the dichotomy for me. So, you know, we can all take a step to make a change, a positive change every day. The opportunities are there.
Wonderful. Michael Eagle, Florida Holocaust Museum, thanks for joining us.
And thank you for having me. Really appreciate it.
From stpcatalyst.com.